What's up, guys? We're here with the Next Gen Sales Leader Podcast. I'm here with Tomer Levy, who is the founder of Mailin, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Benjamin. How are you doing, man?
Good, good. So let's hear all about Mailin. I know we're going to do a quick demo. I want to see that as well. But before we do, if you could give us a quick background on what is Mailin, what is the value prop, why should people pay attention, and how does this apply to cold outbound or outbound in general for B2B?
Of course. Yeah. Just before I started Mailin, I did have a cold email agency myself. So cold email deliverability was the number one problem I was trying to tackle. And this was back in 2023. Now, fast forward 2025, now we're looking at cold email deliverability, the entire market's changed. Now, why did Mailin stand out? We have private servers and private IP. What did that mean? You own your own infrastructure and you own your own deliverability. There's about a million solutions on the market. Everyone wants to offer something. Everyone says, hey, I have the best deliverability, but do they actually? And the whole reason with Mailin is you own your own deliverability. So if you know what you're doing, it's fantastic because you own your server, you own your IP. And if you do the right things and you follow best practices, then you're always going to have fantastic deliverability. That makes sense.
So let's give everybody kind of the first grade level education on, because you talked about how, you know, this has been around since the 80s and there's certain problems if you have shared IPs. Any type of education there, I think, is helpful for anyone trying to wrap their minds around this deliverability problem, especially, you know, we're recording this in early 2025. Getting into inboxes is harder and harder. I personally have tried all the different providers out there, and I can say that I've had trouble with my own deliverability. So if there is something I'm missing, and if this is potentially a part of that answer, I would like to know. So yeah, if you could give us a deeper background on what is going on, technically speaking, that makes this important.
Yeah, so email servers, as we talked about before, have been around since, I mean, basically the internet was invented. And the way email servers are structured, I mean, has never changed. You have to think of it as like a node. So you have like all the way at the bottom, your mailboxes, and then upwards, you have domains, IPs, and servers. Everyone always thinks about the mailboxes and domains, but then you always have to think on top, because everything is connected. And now people are starting to realize IPs matter and servers also matter. So for example, if you're sharing an IP with a bunch of other people and somebody goes and burns it out, then your domains and mailboxes are also affected because you're under the same node, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. What is an IP? Let's start there.
An IP address is basically kind of, it kind of just shows where like your domain and mailboxes are located, give or take. I guess if we're going to dumb it down. And now, for example, if you have the same domain and same mailboxes as, like your IPs are located in the same place as somebody else's, it kind of has that sort of same location, give or take. Now, what happens if you go and burn that IP, it associates all those domains and mailboxes together. And now you have to think like Google goes and flags your IP. Now, all the domains and mailboxes under are connected. So it's kind of showing like your location. So now if you have 10 other people sharing that same IP and that IP gets burned, everyone's connected because it's all associated together.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, reputation is a variable that is tracked by these email service providers like Outlook and Google and any other provider out there. And your reputation can be impacted by the behavior of other people that are sharing the air quote location, which is the IP.
Exactly. Again, like I'm giving you it in like a dumbed down version. But again, just think about it. It's some sort of general location that these ESPs can go ahead and track. If this location is considered a bad sender, meaning you're sending a bunch of garbage, then everyone under on that same node is considered garbage. That's why when you go and your IP gets blacklisted, all those domains and mailboxes under get flagged. And that's where you want to go and rotate that IP out or just completely switch it out. You can give every single person their own IP address. That entire group gets the same IP address. There's a bunch of different ways you go about it. And that's kind of how the provider differentiates themselves.
Okay. And so in terms of the way that you handle it versus say how the competitors handle it, what makes it different or better, or why does it matter to someone like me who runs a cold email outbound agency?
Yeah, so I don't want to say like we're better or worse. There's pros and cons to everything. Like, for example, if you have your own IP address, then the pros are like you can dictate your reputation in the market. So your specific location can be a fantastic sender. Google and Microsoft love you. You're not sending crap. You're not getting flagged. You're going about the sending limits. You're not sending links. You're syntaxing. Overall, like, you're being a good person to Google and Microsoft. So they like you. You're getting in the inbox consistently. Now, what happens is these IPs get a reputation over time. They're like, wow, he's fantastic. He's been working with us for 6 months, a year, working with us, location. But at the end of the day, they see you as someone trustworthy. Now, what happens when you go and rotate IPs or share IPs? So sharing IPs means you're sharing it with, I mean, it really depends on the provider, but it could be 5, 10, 20, 30, 50 other people. You can pull as many people as you want on this IP. Now, why is that good and why is that bad? It's bad. Let's start with the bad. It's bad because if somebody goes and starts sending out Nigerian print or Viagra email, then it can also harm you because you're on the same IP. It doesn't matter that you guys have different domains and different mailboxes. The IP associates, it's a node. Again, after like mailboxes and domains, you have IPs and servers. And like these DSPs, like Google and Microsoft, they check your IP. So that's the bad part. The good part is if you are sending crap or you don't know what you're doing. So for example, you are sending hyperlinks because you just don't know. You're not running it through a spam checker. You're doing a lot of this stuff where it's like you're going to get a spam. It's really good to be on a shared pool. So what happens if you're on a shared pool is they can go and rotate out your IP. So for example, if the IP goes and gets blocked with, they're going to go and give the entire pool a brand new IP. So pros of a shared pool is if you don't know what you're doing, it's fantastic, or if you have a spammy offer. So now imagine in that shared pool, I was the guy who was sending Nigerian prints and Viagra emails, or I had a loan offer that was going to go ahead and get me in the spam folder. For example, if you're pushing out MCAs, you're pushing out SBA loans. This is stuff that in the ESPs gets you blacklisted really quick. Now, if I'm on a shared pool, I'm not going to say I'm going to be safe, but I'm going to keep getting new IPs because that's just the way it works. They know it. Like, okay, when you get blacklisted, that's in their protocol, get a new IP. So you're somewhat safe. But is your IP on the same level? Who knows? Again, like these are IPs that you're not using primarily. So when you go and rotate it out for a new IP, you never know what you're getting. Generally, like imagine you go and rotate out an IP and they give you a brand new one. It could be that this one's also blacklisted, but it could be that they give you a good IP. Again, you just never know. But how good is that IP? Is it as good as the one that you've been warming up for 2 years and it's shut you on that server? So it's really only good stuff that's coming out of it. You've never gotten blacklisted. You're not getting spam complaints. Like you're abiding by all best practices. And then you have the other side where like you have no idea what's going on. And that's kind of like the pros and cons between shared and dedicated IP. Again, like there's not one better than the other.
Okay, so let's play devil's advocate. So what is the reason why should people use, say, a shared IP over what you guys offer, which sounds to me more like a dedicated IP? Why would they want to do that? And it sounds like one of the things is how experienced they are. But what else? I mean, what other risks are there?
Yeah, if you're using a shared IP, I mean, the pros are for shared IP. The pros are you can really send whatever you want, and you'll always kind of get a new IP. So overall, if you are blacklisted, you're not going to be blacklisted for too long. And the second reason is if you don't know what you're doing as well, like you'll be more or less safe because if you do, again, it's on the same premise. If you do get blacklisted from the IP standpoint, then they usually rotate it out and give you a new one. Now, dedicated, on the other hand, why I believe it's better is for the more experienced people. Like, for example, you run an agency, like you have 30 clients, like you really care about deliverability, but you know what you're doing. Like, you know, like, hey, if I'm going to go start sending out cold emails, I'm not going to get into the spam folder. I know, like, I'm not going to send hyperlinks. I'm going to abide by best practices. I'm not going to send 100 emails a day. I'm not going to make these providers hate me. So I'm going to go and build out my own server, my own IP, my own infrastructure, and then build up that reputation over time. Again, like the point of mail-in is it's all yours. So maybe those first few weeks you're building up your reputation. That's why for mail-in also, we do want a 3 to 4 week warm up. Again, like you're slowly building that reputation, but long-term, like a month, 2 months, 3 months in, like you're going to be performing better. It could be though with these shared providers, again, luck of the draw. You could be performing great for 3 or 4 months. You were telling me beforehand, like you had a great run, but then boom, deliverability tank. Why does it tank? again, it could be a million reasons, but probably one of those reasons is someone came into your pool and they start sending out crap. If everything you did was the same, again, it could be some change on the ESG standpoint, but a lot of people joined Mailin because, again, they were doing everything right. They had a lot of clients, or they were just sending a ton of emails and they were doing everything right, but then just a bad actor came and destroyed their deliverability.
Cool. Yeah. I have noticed that when we get a client that has an extremely established domain and brand that's been around for a decade, and they have already, you know, millions of visitors to the website versus, say, somebody who's only been around for 2 years or a year, there definitely is a difference in deliverability. And so you're saying that it is a clear and obvious thing for these ESPs to give you more, I'm just going to use the word domain authority, that allows you to get into the inbox just because you have a certain brand, or what are we talking about here? Because I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yeah, it's more of a reputation from an IP and server standpoint. If you're considered a good sender by them, they can want you to get into the inbox. Again, there's a lot of different factors that go into deliverability. I'm not going to say just IPs and servers, but does it have a massive impact? Yes, it does. For Outlook, they want to see domain name. Does that have anything to do with dedicated IPs and dedicated servers? No, it does not. Does Outlook want Blur email? Do they want those one or two sentences that don't sound like old email? Yes. But again, like, you also have to think, like, in the future too. I tell this to a lot of people. The basic methodology right now, and like what people are basing it off of, and what people on LinkedIn are saying, is don't sound like a cold email. Don't look like a cold email. Why does nobody want to try opening click rates now? I mean, because you're embedding code into your emails. So now, how does rotating IPs make sense? Like, if you're going to go and start sending out an email, are you going to go and start sending it out from 10 different IPs? No, it just doesn't make sense. Again, like, does it have a massive impact now? Maybe not. Does it have a massive impact a year or 2 years from now with the rules change? Yes. Like, domain masking. Right now, there's not a lot of information on domain masking, but will it maybe have a massive impact in a year or 2 years? Sure, it could. The whole point is you just
what is domain masking email. For everybody listening?
Domain masking is basically like, you're going and you received an email from tomerlevy.com. And when people click on it, it shows it's from tomerlevy123.com, but it's really from tomerlevy.com. Mm. So you're just masking your domain. It's exactly what it sounds like. So people don't really see the origin. Again, like, do all these things kind of help? Yeah, it's just not sounding like a cold email. You want to do everything you can not to sound like a cold email. But from a deliverability specific standpoint today, IP reputation really does matter. You want to have a fantastic IP reputation. You want to have your own infrastructure if you know what you're doing. That's just the main difference. If we're going to talk about infrastructure, if you know what you're doing, go on dedicated. You're going to have better deliverability in the long run.
In infrastructure, we're talking about domains and then the inboxes. So nextgensalesleaders.com and then ben@nextgensalesleaders.com is the inbox. Is that what we're talking about by infrastructure, or are you using it in different
ways? So infrastructure, I'm saying the entire node. You want to have like your own mailbox and domain, IPs and servers.
And so for everyone listening, I'm trying to make this approachable for even like the business owner who is now trying to make a decision between different cold email agencies, or maybe they're doing it internally with themselves and they have somebody who maybe is really good at copywriting and generally cold email writing, but doesn't understand the technical side of things. What's the difference between an IP and a server, for example?
So an IP address, like we said, it's kind of like a location, but the server itself is, I mean, it can be a lot of different things, where the emails are being sent, like how they're being sent, how they're being received. It's the actual like server power that's being used, like how this all functions. But you can't go and send emails out without a server, or you can't receive emails without a server as well. Kind of like the power, like websites hosted? How does anything work right now on the cloud? You need servers.
Mm-hmm. And so
that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. So is it in that sense, it's like a database that holds and receives the information that's sent and then sent out again? Is that kind of what it's like?
I mean, servers are a little more complicated than that. I mean, servers can perform a lot of different functions. Again, servers can host websites. Servers can give you the ability to send emails. Servers can give you the ability to receive emails. I mean, servers can have a lot of different functions. I mean, depending on the way you actually use them.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys have a preference for a particular cloud environment, GCP, Azure, AWS? Does it matter?
We vary it depending on the cloud provider. So again, with email infrastructure, it's a little bit tricky. The Azure loophole, which a lot of people are using right now.
What's it called?
The Azure loophole.
Azure loop. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of providers like Superwave, HyperTide. I think there's a few other ones. Me personally, I think it's a really good short-term solution. In terms of cloud providers, though, what Mailin does is we use a lot of different ones. Because again, email servers are a little bit tricky. People don't like, especially with cold email. When you're doing transactional email, it's a whole different game. Right now, I'm talking specifically about cold emails. A lot of these providers, they don't like it when you send cold emails. So we just have a lot of backup, just in case. So no Mailin user actually gets screwed in the long run. The Azure method specifically, though, at the end of the day, conceptually, it makes a lot of sense. If you're going to go send from a Microsoft Azure server, is it better for Outlook deliverability? Yeah, it makes sense conceptually. Are a lot of users having trouble with it right now? Yeah, but that's not the issue. I mean, the issue is long-term, it's a loophole. So it could just get shut down.
You said the Azure method? Is that what you're calling it? So what is that?
It's basically they're using Microsoft servers. So as we said, we have like the mailboxes, the domains, the IPs, and the servers. So on the server level, they're using Microsoft Azure.
Mm-hmm. And so this is where the email service provider routing that you get in, say, for example, Instantly can be very helpful because you can go Gmail to Gmail or Outlook to Outlook or that kind of thing.
Yes, but also in the fact that like you just have to think about it conceptually. If you're sending from Microsoft to Microsoft, like it should have better deliverability. Same way as Google to Google has better deliverability. I mean, there's a lot of KPIs and metrics right now saying Microsoft didn't specifically mean better deliverability. But as like we've been seeing right now, Azure servers to Microsoft inboxes does seem to have better deliverability. The only issue is Microsoft Azure does not allow for cold email. So what's going to happen like when this method's caught? I mean, all your mailboxes, all your domains under are kind of screwed. But then you have to go migrate everything over. And then the 2,000 leads that you have in your pipeline that are all completely hot and you value them at $1.2 million, like you can't go and follow up with them. Because again, like Microsoft Azure just kicked you guys all out. Mm-hmm. So that's why I would recommend having the backup. It's not a bad method whatsoever, but it's a loophole. Nobody knows how long it's going to last for. Same right now with a lot of people that are relying on Google Lifetime Panels. Like everyone was like, oh, this is amazing. I'm getting like these lifetime inboxes. I just need to rely on this. But then again, boom, they ran out of supply.
Can you describe what that is, Google Lifetime Handles?
Yeah, so Lifetime Panels were basically legacy accounts that people were using. And it was on the basis of you get 300 Google mailboxes. There's a lot of other ones, like where you get 1,000, but the best ones were the 300 ones. And then I think you purchase them for anywhere between like $900 to $1,200. It's a fantastic deal. But again, they're just a limited quantity. So you always need backup. Now, another example is using Google resellers. Not a bad idea, but again, it depends like what's their source. Are they just using a VPN to buy them from India? Or are they using EDU accounts? So now if someone's selling you EDU accounts, they can easily get banned.
Can you describe the difference? Because I think most people listening won't know what's an EDU account versus some other variation.
Yeah. Of course. So when you go and buy Google Workspace accounts, you have a few different options. Everyone thinks, oh, you can just get them from a reseller and then you can get them from Google. But there's different kinds of resellers and you can get them from a million different places. So now it's kind of like, the best way to describe it is how easily susceptible are they to get banned? So now if you're going to go send out from an educational account cold email, it's going to get banned a lot quicker than you would like normal Google account, if that makes sense, or nonprofit account. Because nonprofit accounts should not be sending cold emails. So they have a higher tendency to get banned.
How would they go into an educational account versus a nonprofit account?
To be honest, I'm not the guy to answer that because I don't use Google resellers. Mm-hmm. But again, those are like the few main methods right now, either like the normal account, depending on what the reseller does. So you can either use like a VPN from India and go buy like accounts and then just resell them, a lot of people reselling the lifetime panel. And then you have EDU and nonprofit accounts. The EDU and nonprofit accounts, I personally don't recommend them. Again, if you have a super spammy offer, then why not? Just go ahead and push and keep rotating it over and over again, because you just know you're going to get flagged either way. You're using Google's IPs as well, so you don't have to deal with that issue. But again, pros and cons to everything.
And by rotating, you mean like you go and you send a bunch of emails, you burn the account, and then move it out, and then you wait for it to warm up again. And then meanwhile, you have another batch of inboxes and you burn that. And then it's like crop rotation, just constantly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a bunch of crap. I mean, but at the same time, like instead of going to a reseller and buying it for $3 per mailbox, you can get mailboxes for, I think right now, a buddy sent me over. I think it was like 300, like, now maybe it was like 1,000 mailboxes for $300 lifetime. Something ridiculous.
Right? So they're not paying monthly, they're just paying a one-time flat fee and they get it forever?
Yeah, it's these educational accounts. But again, like these panels can get banned really quick. Really quick. Like they're very like susceptible to getting banned from cold email. Same with nonprofit accounts as well. There's a few different methods to go about it though. The legacy accounts were the best way to do it. Educational accounts, I've seen a few different vendors. Again, I've seen people sell it for one time, lifetime. And I'm assuming they just get banned really quick. And that's why they're selling it lifetime. I've seen people sell it monthly as well. Like the lifetime ones, I think it's like 10,000 mailboxes for $300 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I mean, they always just find ways to margin it. There's a lot of scammers in the space as well. To be honest, I would just, if you're going to go the Google reseller route, I would just go somewhere that's actually reliable.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have the one thing you know, that, to be honest, not really. I just, it's not my space. I don't want to comment on something that I don't really know too much about. Sure. This is just like what I know from the industry. I have friends that resell Google mailboxes. I haven't used them personally, so I can't go ahead and recommend them. But from the people that I've heard, premium inboxes, I've heard is fantastic. So, I mean, if I would have to say go in one direction, go there. I've heard a lot of good things about them. A lot of mailing users as well, like they just use a few different providers just in case, which is fair.
So would you say, okay, let's pretend you were advising a cold email agency. Let's say that you're advising me and you said, okay, Ben, you have a new client you just brought on board. And the need to send out, I don't know, 50,000 emails per week. What kind of mix of infrastructure would you suggest for them? Would you go all in with mail-in? Would you separate it out to go with some Google resellers, some shared IP version of a competitor that you have, and then also the dedicated IPs with you guys? Or what would your advice be? Try to be as unbiased.
Exactly. See, I'm a little bit biased, but okay. In my personal opinion, I would first try figuring out like who are they trying to target, and that's the one thing. Like, for example, if 70% of the people that they're trying to target use Microsoft mailboxes, or they're trying to go after enterprise accounts, but you know that they're using Microsoft, maybe I'd probably go with something like HyperTide, and then something like HyperTide, and maybe like a bit of mail-in in the mix. To be honest, I don't like Google resellers personally, because I mean, I'll show you afterwards on instantly like how we're delivering. But I mean, to everything other than Microsoft, which again, it really depends on the sender, which is like why I can't show Microsoft deliverability, because it really, really depends on the sender. I mean, we perform fantastic. Microsoft though, again, like if you send from Microsoft to Microsoft, Azure to Microsoft, you're technically going to be performing better. So first, to answer your question, I was just figuring out who are they trying to send to. That's the first thing. Also, like, what's the LTV? So now if it's a really expensive LTV and they're like, okay, we're going to make a ton of money on this campaign, because HyperTide has an initiation fee. Is it worth it to pay this initiation fee and, I don't know, next month their infrastructure go down? It's something that you need to consider.
What is HyperTide for everybody?
Yeah, HyperTide is the Azure method, and that's probably the provider that I would recommend as well. I send them a lot of people and people are like, oh, okay, like I have 70% of my people, 80% are using Microsoft. And then I have like another 20% that are Google and I want to use someone else. So I'm like, okay, use HyperTide and use Mailin. But for the vast majority of people, I would just use Mailin because nobody's really sending, I don't know, 50,000 emails a day. Not many people. We do have some people on Mailin that are sending a few million a month. We have like two or three people that are sending over 10 million. But again, like it really depends on what you're going after and what's the objective.
Got it. So now when you say hypertide for the Microsoft, what makes that? Is that because they specialize in Azure? Is that the reason? Or what is the
So the whole point, like I told you beforehand, so from the server standpoint, they're using Microsoft Azure servers. The Microsoft for Microsoft, I mean, conceptually makes sense. Users have been getting better deliverability too when you send from Azure to Microsoft inbox.
Mm-hmm. And for mail-in, then do you guys do or you do not send for Azure servers?
No, we don't use Azure servers. And the reason being is just because we know it's just going to go down at some point. And I'd rather just have something more reliable in the long run than just have my servers get taken down and then like it's a crapshoot, basically.
So tell us about that. What makes your method extremely reliable? Any from a technical perspective, from anything that you think that would differentiate you from the competition, and try not to be nice now. I actually want to hear like the biased version of like, what makes you guys amazing?
Yeah. I mean, I'll take from a non-biased point. We get into the inbox every single time. I actually had someone convert the other day. It's like, I'm not sure. I literally had a few messages where I sent them over. I'm like, okay, let me just go through my inbox. Because obviously we send 1.5 million emails a month. And I literally showed him a few messages where I was like, oh, like you got marked as important on Google, like congratulations. Or like a bunch of different messages like that, where we just keep getting into the inbox. Some of our cold email campaigns as well, where we're literally just saying like, I'm assuming I got into the inbox. We know we're hitting it, but we're following best practices. Why do I think mail-in is the best solution? It's because if you do everything right, and again, this is for the experienced person, if you're doing everything right, statistically in the way that email servers work, again, I'm not reinventing the wheel here, just the way things work. If you have a fantastic IP reputation and you're sending it from good servers, like you will be doing better than somebody who's just rotating IP and sharing it with other people. That's just how it is. Also, we have fantastic customer support 24/7. Because again, shit happens. We're in the email deliverability phase. Nothing perfect. So if you ever run into any sort of issues, we have people in both time zones, 24 hours a day, and someone's always going to help you. But that's the issue I see with a lot of providers as well. Like it could just be like 1 or 2 days where you're not getting any answers. We have no idea what's going on. Because again, like you're relying on somebody else basically to make sure everything's going right. We also look at your campaigns as well, just to make sure you're not doing anything that can hurt your deliverability. Like we're really helping you every step along the way. The no-brainer. Again, if you know what you're doing and you're not sending crap. Let me just kind of even just show you a little demo of the platform as well.
Sure, yeah. So we have 9 minutes before the end of this, but do show us. And please, for the people listening on Spotify or any of the audio ones, please try to use as much description as possible, because I know he's about to share a screen.
Fantastic. Let me just kind of just show you our Instantly account as well. You actually have to pause, and you're sending way too many. We were sending too many inbox placement tests.
So we're actually very hitting. Listening. We are in Instantly. And if you don't know Instantly, Instantly is my preferred sender. Go Instantly for sending out and managing all of these campaigns in one place. It has a central inbox. It has the ability to do ESP, email service provider routing. So you get Outlook to Outlook, Google to Google, which is what we were describing earlier. And then it also has the ability to do warmups for you and have warmup polls constantly going every single day. So there's a bunch of benefits. We can't really cover it all here, but we are inside of the platform and we're showing actual campaigns from Tomer's account.
Exactly. Most of the time, again, if it's any other provider other than Microsoft, we are hitting the inbox every single time. For this specific campaign where it's Finance Outlook, we did pick out the Outlook. It's because we just stopped sending to them about a month ago. Just because like we've just seen, we'd rather just have better reputation and just keep hitting that inbox every single time. Now from the mail-in dashboard itself, now there's a few different things I want to tell you here. Ben, also, if I can just show you the mailbox section. It shows my username and password for the mailbox account. Can you just go ahead and blur that out after this?
Say that one more time.
So when I go into the mailbox, it does show my username and password for some mailboxes. Can you blur that out after?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's not a problem.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. Now, this is the dashboard itself. So you're going to go through an automated onboarding form. It takes 5 to 10 minutes as well. You can also transfer domains, which is one of the main pros of mail-in. Again, as long as you're not blacklisted, we're completely fine with that. Reason being, we don't want to make money off your own domain. Again, the whole point of mail-in, and I think it's a pro, is we, I mean, at the end of the day, we want to do good business by people. We don't want to make money off you for domains. If you have domains that you already own, you can transfer to them. A lot of providers would think, hey, you have to buy the domains by us. There's no reason for that. Add the feature in. So for Mailin, you can go and transfer domains. You can either purchase them or transfer. So when you go through the onboarding form itself, it takes 5 to 10 minutes. You put in your first name, last name, 5 different company variations. So if you want to buy 1,000 mailboxes, 333 domains, and want all your DNS set up on the back end, it takes 5 minutes. 2,000 mailboxes, same thing. 10,000 mailboxes, the same thing. Now, the platform itself is super simple. So for example, if you are an agency owner, you go through the onboarding form as if you're one client, then you can keep doing the fast checkout over and over again for every single client. Again, if you want to just separate it out. Now, here's how the actual domains look like. This is the number of mailboxes per domain. You can forward it to one master domain. We personally use Instantly, so we don't have a master inbox because it has that natively. Just shows active and active. Here's your actual DNS. Again, you can just go here, purchase for transfer domain. Super simple. Also, in terms of transferring domain, you don't actually have to physically transfer it over to us. You can just point the name servers. So you still own the domain. If you do purchase them through us and you do want to leave Mailin, we'll just give you back the domain. Again, they're yours. You own them. Mailboxes, again, you can just blur this out. Here's the actual mailboxes themselves. I personally have 2,700 mailboxes. Here's how it actually looks like. Emails, passwords, the domains itself. You can actually log into each individual mailbox as well if you want to. You can create individual mailboxes as well. You can make bulk inboxes if you want to make it super easy on you. And then you can export it basically any provider. The CSV, one-click upload, super easy. The whole point of Mailin is we just make this entire process super simple. 5 to 10 minutes, you're ready to go. Once your DNS is propagated, that's it. Like, you can already start warming up emails.
So, okay. So let's say I come in here, I purchase, say, I don't know, 1,000 domains, and then I want to go and do Instantly. You're saying I just go to the little drop down and I click on the export button. It gives me, what does it give me? Is it going, is it a API connection? Is it a CSV file?
It's a CSV file.
Okay.
Yeah. CSV file, bulk upload on Instantly. And then it just automatically connects every single mailbox. Super easy. Like, super easy.
And it's already in the warm up pool once you set that up on Instantly and you, it'll go from there.
Exactly. It can take anywhere between like 10 minutes to 24 hours, depending on DNS propagating on Mailin side. And that just has to do with the name servers itself, whether you transfer or purchase them. You just wait for the mailbox to stay active. Usually it takes 5 to 10 minutes to fill out the onboarding form, another 10 minutes for the DNS to propagate. And then from there, you're good to stay.
And then, so then what is your recommendation for total inboxes per domain, that ratio?
I personally say max 5, which is what we have on Mailin. 2 to 3 is my recommendation.
And then in terms of total email sent per day, what do you suggest in terms of per inbox?
I personally like 10 to 15. Again, like mailboxes on Mailin, I'll kind of just give you guys an overview on pricing. $1.50 per mailbox, $1.20 you go yearly. And then if you go over 1,000 mailboxes, it's only $1 per mailbox. I would rather not give up anything that could hurt deliverability just because I want to go ahead and send more emails. Keep it at 10 to 15. Play it safe. Again, that works fantastic for us. It works fantastic for our users. We have people doing 25 to 30 a day and it's fine. But again, rather be safe than sorry. 10 to 15 is a fantastic number.
But you're saying so 25 to 30 would be the absolute cap. And then after that, you think that's a big problem?
I mean, I would say 30 is like, keep it at 30. Again, at the end of the day, you can send 1 million emails from the same mailbox. It all depends on how many people are reporting you as spam. That's technically the metric you really want to look at. But my personal recommendation,
can you look at that on your platform? Can you look at that somewhere?
Not really. I mean, you can't really see if people are reporting you as spam. You can get spam complaints, and then it's different. Like, you won't personally be notified. We can get notified. They're like, hey, you're receiving spam complaints. But you can't really see the number of people that are reporting you as spam. And not from my understanding as well. Maybe I have to go back and talk to my developers, but no. You can't see how people are reporting you as spam.
And then in your account, can we see when a inbox is burned or is not delivering or anything like that?
So that's from Instantly, and that's from Instantly's perspective. On our back end, we can see it, but that's really from like the sending provider that you're using. My personal recommendation every single time is Instantly. I love their automatic inbox placement test. Then you can just see if your mailboxes are hitting, let's just say, under 70%, you just take them out and put them back into the warm-up pool for like 14 to 30 days. Then when they go back to up to 85%, then it basically just puts them back into your campaign. I love that feature. I personally use it. It's fantastic.
And what do you recommend? Yeah. What is the benchmark there for people listening on the deliverability? What do they want to see?
I mean, everyone wants to see 95% plus in terms of deliverability. And like, that's where you should be at if you follow best practices. Again, like it all really depends on like, what's your offer? Are you doing everything from like the infrastructure standpoint we handle, but are you doing everything based on like the actual ESP to get into the inbox? And these are really like, that's the kind of stuff you need to be thinking of. For example, like on Outlook, they have different requirements than Google. So if you want to, you can have two different campaigns, one for Google and one for Outlook. But for example, if you really want to send like super long copy, you're like, I have to do this, test it out for Google. And then for Outlook, just do super short copy because they prefer that. So like abide by their rules. Like if they're telling you like this is best practice, like do best practice.
And what would you say if you had to give everyone in the last final minute here, the top five deliverability tips in terms of best practices, writing cold email? I know you just did a post on this, but if you want to add some sweetener yep. in the post, anything like rattle off like the number one things everyone should be doing.
I mean, there's obviously the obvious. I'm just going to kind of like spit stuff out. Fantastic on the company and fantastic on the company level as well and the job title. So I don't just say like, if you're going to put in your company name, if you send out mass volumes, I mean, debatable subject, but instead of just putting Tomer like CEO at Mailin, like Tomer, like founder of Mailin, so like Mailin founder, Mailin CEO, like fantastic as well. But they can catch on to your signature. Be smart, like go against them. Second thing, and again, I'm not going to say the obvious stuff here, like, I don't know, hype, like, just been asking in general, like link, don't sound like a cold email. That's the biggest thing that I see. Run it through a spam checker as well. But let me just kind of go back.
What spam checker do you use for everybody listening?
I use Mail Meteor. It's free. Again, it's just kind of running it through a bunch of different words that you shouldn't use. Again, I'm no genius. I can't remember a million different words in my head, but using the word free, like dollar signs, it doesn't really help with your deliverability. It obviously makes you sound like a cold email. I don't want to do an, again, think of things to not sound like a cold email. Embedding code that doesn't, you're going to look like a cold email. Don't do it. There's a lot of different things that you need to be thinking of, but there's a lot of obvious stuff as well that people need to be following that really impact deliverability. Like links, for example, I've seen a few users that go ahead and send links. Like it's going to get you in the spam folder. It just is what it is. Like do what you need to do. There's a lot of people there. It's like, oh, no, whatever. I'm just going to do it. It's fine. Like, it's not fine. Like, do what you need to do. Otherwise, if you're like, oh, I don't know what to do, just like go on one of my posts, go on someone's post. It's been very obvious information. Or if you just don't want to do it and you want to delegate it out, then hire an agency or just go to like a shared pool. Again, like,
let me ask you one question. So why use Spintax versus, say, AI, fully copywritten AI? Because obviously right now the trend is AI, go into Clay, come up with some type of prompt, grab the information that's been collected from, say, other different providers, whether it's Apollo and then Trigify, and then some other, say, Autobound, and you put all this data into this Clay table, and then you take a prompt and you say, write me a cold email with this information. Is that good? Is that bad? Why should people use Spintax? Do you use Spintax with cold email? There's a bunch of, or with the AI written side. Just curious what your thoughts are there. Last thought.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you right now, in terms of AI first line, I like that. Even at the end of the day, for cold emailers, like, oh, obviously looks like an AI first line. For a lot of other people, they're like, wow, like, thank you so much for like writing this personalized email. It does work well even for as a cold emailer, you're like, oh, this is obviously cold email. In terms of doing the entire email, I just haven't found anything good enough to actually like, first line is the entire email. First lines are pretty easy. The entire email is a whole different ballgame. I mean, for anyone listening to this, it could be a fantastic staff. But it's a different ballgame. You got to get really good to do the entire email as well. And again, I want to humanize like the actual offer, like the body itself. And I just feel like if I use an AI, and I have done this, I've tried it, it sounds too much like AI. When you try spin-taxing everything or AIing everything.
So last follow up on that point, do you think there is a problem with email service providers fingerprinting either AI or also, if you just send the same exact, let's say you do the AI the first sentence and then you spin tag some of the words, but then at the end you just say like three or four lines that are purely hard coded, meaning they're the same exact thing across 20,000 emails. Don't you think the ESPs would pick up on that and flag you?
Really depends. I mean, it's just like what testing could be over time that they flag you. Straight off the bat, they won't. Like straight off the bat, like that just won't be the issue. It's just long term. It could be, for example, that they flag your phone number because you're just putting Tomer Levy, EOF, mailin.ai, and then I just put in my phone number. You flag that phone number, you take it out, and you see what happened. Nothing's clear cut in email deliverability. There's just best practices that you need to follow. You have no idea what Google and Microsoft are doing on their end. In terms of AI, them flagging AI, haven't seen it so far where they're like, oh, this is an AI first line. Like, we're going to go ahead and flag that. But if you're going and sending out the same thing every single time, yeah. Like sometimes like you just have to remove it, see how it works. It's all split testing. If you don't know, test it and see.
Yeah, totally. All right. Well, thank you so much, Tomer. This has been fantastic. And we are going to sign off here, guys. Obviously, go check out Mailin. Go try out some of the inboxes and some of the domains. And we will see you guys on the next episode. Thanks a lot. And we'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you.